Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Indeed. Justice, are you with us this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm okay. Justice, you we noticed you're not here.
You both sound down. You both sound like, oh, no, it's the end of the world or something like that.
Justice. I'm going to let Ben lead here because he's actually the one with the issue. Go ahead, Ben.
Justice, it's not the end of the world, but we just want to know where we stand with you. You know, you're in and out. In the beginning of this relationship, you were here all the time. You were on time. You stayed late. You know, there was smiles. You were looking fresh. Now it's, oh, guys, sorry, I'm in Cape Town.
Yeah, I'm in PE.
You know what? And that was fair, Justice, because you're a man in demand. So when you say, I'm in Cape Town, there's Parliament, we go, okay, cool. Justice, you know what? That's you. This week, however, you're telling us you're in PE?
And the waves are great here, you know?
Yeah, see. Now, Justice, is there someone else? Because nothing happens at PE. For a man of your expertise, nothing is there for you.
Justice, Ben is basically feeling very neglected here, and he just wants some of your attention. I mean, that's what this is about.
Ben, you know what?
Yeah, see, my buddy, hesitation. I told you there was someone else.
There's something going on. What's the Elvis song? We can't go on together with suspicious minds.
Well, Justice, let me lay this out to you. Who's making you suspicious? It's not me. Alrighty, but let's get into it. So obviously all the focus right now is on the America. But you know, we always like to get to know that our issues are not going to be neglected. So what's happening here?
Yeah, I saw a nice tweet yesterday by Jeremy Clarkson, who retweeted, somebody asked the question, why did Trump win? And Clarkson's response was, my guess is because people voted for him. But this is exactly it, isn't it, Justice? Is people are trying to decipher and figure out how it is that Donald Trump won that election.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know what? You know, I think you remember in July, we spoke about Brexit and what it meant and why did people vote to leave the UK, to leave the EU, and essentially build a bit of a lager in the UK. And I think the issues are pretty similar with this election in the US. What we've seen are people increasingly dissatisfied, if you will, with the establishment. You've seen people increasingly saying, no, this globalization business is not so good. People are taking our jobs. People are coming in from other countries and they're doing this and so forth. And Donald Trump essentially ran on that ticket. When he started his campaign, you'll remember Nigel Farage, who's the UKIP leader in the UK, which is quite a right-wing organization, was one of the first people to arrive and say, I'm here to help Donald Trump. I'm here to do this and that for him. And you've seen a lot of those leaders come through. And I think this is just the beginning of a wave of political change across the world. I think the world is going to become meaner, is going to become more inward looking. I think that you're going to see an America that really, in its foreign policy, in its dealings with the world, will be all about me, and forget the plight of Africa, forget the plight of other nations. I think we're seeing a sea change in global politics. Many of us on this continent have essentially known the U.S. to be a defender of human rights, and we've received aid for countries that have struggled in the past. I think all that is going to come to an end. I think the U.S. is going to demand that countries like Kenya and so forth take responsibility for some of the security challenges, whether it's Al-Shabaab and other terror groupings on the continent. I think it's going to be a very different world. But I think Europe and the West are shutting down, are becoming more inward-looking, are becoming more insular. And I think next year, when the French go to vote, when the Germans go to vote, don't be surprised when we see a right-wing leader emerge there someone who pushes the line pretty much like Donald Trump, that says all our faults are because we have foreigners on our land, and so let's shut down the border. I think that's where we're going.
People are already kind of talking about this new world order, which is obviously a nice thing to say because it makes you sound like you're very intelligent. But I mean, it's kind of how it works in politics, isn't it? We definitely see trends like that. And if something happens in America, the ripples are very far seen.
Yeah, but I think what is concerning for me is what it says about security around the world. If you think about it, the kind of ideas that are floating around are the kinds of ideas that floated around in the run up to the Second World War. You had a world that was economically under pressure. You had countries essentially very susceptible to people who would arrive and say, "I will give you the solution," and the fault lies with the Jews or the foreigners or the immigrants and so forth. And I think some of the drums we're hearing now that are being beaten by people like Nigel Farage in the UK or Marine Le Pen in France sound very similar. It's almost like, whoa, we've been here before, and we seem to be going back there. So, yeah, you know, we all like to pronounce that, oh, it's the beginning of a new global order. But I think there is something to be concerned about for all of us. The idea of building a more caring society, a more caring world, I think is one that is on the back foot right now.
Sorry to interject, Justice. I didn't actually see or read Trump's speech yesterday, but I did see people commenting on, oh, you know, he almost came across as human and he wasn't as brash, you know, speaking about unity for a change. And
yeah.
I mean, is it not important also for us not to get carried away, you know, with the supposed threats that Trump made while campaigning? If he wanted to execute all of those threats, he would need support to do so, right? He can't just do it on his own.
Donald Trump's speech was, as many said, almost presidential. It was open, it was forgiving, it was let's move on. You almost thought, what's going on here? Has he changed? My beef is that basically you have a situation where he made all these grand promises and threats and all sorts of other things. All of them essentially that, you know, he's going to change the world and change the U.S. And he's made the pledge that he's not going to wait for 100 days to do all these things. He's going to do them all within. He's going to do them all within a year of coming to power. Within a day of coming to power, he's going to go in there and sign, essentially, almost erase Barack Obama's legacy. And your question about, you know, should we not get carried away? My view is that it's very good to be presidential today, the day that you win. But when the pressure mounts, it's 4 years in office, and the pressure begins to mount, I think the real Donald Trump. So Donald Trump, who we saw when he was cornered about his attitude to women, his attitude to black people, attitude to Mexicans, I think that Donald Trump will return. I don't think he was a ploy. I don't think that he was. I think that he will come back and come back talking, and that's when you will see the real Donald Trump reemerge. I think this period is one of conciliation of let's work together and so forth. But I don't think it's going to last
Can I also just point out that speech that he made yesterday, that was a 70-year-old man talking at 3 in the morning. Obviously, he's going to be pretty nice and happy and comfy and stuff. I mean, if that election was on a Saturday at like 3 in the afternoon, he'd be guns blazing about, look out, Mexicans, here comes the wall. So, just
you're absolutely right. There is an element of that. He was tired, but you know, I'm sure he's taken a bit of time to think about it. But that the speech was prepared. I don't think I was that surprised that they won. A lot of people hadn't given them a chance. But I think look, that speech was meant to at least bring together the American people and say, you know, the divisions of the past are this, and let's move on from that. And to a large extent, it did do that.
Well, Justice, the American elections have been, you know, a nice distraction for us here at home over the last day or two. But let's not forget what a lot of South Africans were focused on and wrapped up with just a few days ago, which was the state capture report and the result thereof of what's been happening. You know, former President Thabo Mbeki has written letters. Veterans have been speaking out. The ANC Youth League's Colin Maine has been saying all sorts of things about the public protector. Where are we now with regards to the reaction to the release of that state capture report and where we stand?
I think basically we are set for a... Yes, I think we are set for a long period of contestation about that report. I think that we are going to see. I think essentially the fight is on, the battle is on, and that battle is going to continue for a long time to come. There are many who are essentially saying, you know, this means nothing. This is going to go nowhere. And many others who say action needs to be taken. You should have seen yesterday there was an interfaith organization essentially saying, Chilima Donsela under the bus. And that's what the ANC has been saying. For me, this is almost comical. I think the reaction of the ANC to this report puts us all in no doubt that the ANC is dying or dead, and that it doesn't know how to respond. It doesn't know how to even start to grapple with the problems that it has. So for me, I think what's going to happen is just it's diminishing returns for the party. It's going to get a walloping in 2019, and that walloping will continue. And I think the ANC will find itself out of power within the next 10 years. If this is the way it's going to respond to the challenges that it faces, I don't see how it has any chance whatsoever of keeping its base and convincing the base that it is serious about the fight against corruption or about delivery in general.
And then a day or two ago, Justice, one Twitter user by the name of Jean Leroux, he supposedly, you know, published a list of, you know, over 100 what he has called fake Twitter accounts that are supposedly being used to push the Gupta agenda and to discredit the former public protector, Thulima Donsela. Firstly, what do we know about Jean Leroux and, you know, the whole question of credibility and all of that? Should we just take his word for it?
I don't think we should. I think there is so much anecdotal evidence of sort of nefarious activity, if you will. I will tell you, you look at journalists only, and I don't know if it's happened to you guys, but there's been so many hackings, if you will, of Twitter accounts, for example. There's been so much fake accounts set up that push a particular line. For me, it's not a surprise at all when I start to see the evidence that he's compiled. I think that it just adds on to the narrative of creating not even evidence about, oh, Philippe Jonas did this or did that.
There was that doorbell prior to us losing that connection with
like
Justice.
It's always...
Okay. Oh,
Justice, you back?
We lost you there for a second, Justice. Can you hear us? Yeah.
Yes. I'm saying it adds on to that whole narrative that says, oh, this isn't about just the issues. There's a war on this family and on certain people. Those people are black, and those people are people who are disrupting white monopoly capital, as it's called these days. But at the end of the day, I'm not surprised by these kinds of initiatives. I just think that, if you are involved at all in the kinds of things that the public protector says this family is involved in, there is no doubt in my mind that there's going to be a big, big fight to keep these proceeds of crime intact and to continue to lose. So that battle, that fight is one that I'm not surprised by. I think that we will continue to see these kinds of pushbacks. We will continue to see that kind of fightback that we've seen lately with these Twitter accounts and so forth and so forth. And I think it will go through until the nuclear deal is done and dusted. My view is that that's really the big prize in this battle that's going on.
All right. So, Justice, where to from here? If we look at, if we focus particularly on the opposition parties, because I don't know, it seems to me as if maybe they're running out of options with regards to how to contain the situation. Yes, more and more people have, hopped onto the bandwagon, calling for the president to step down. But as far as the opposition are concerned, another motion of no confidence in parliament for the president. We've seen this happen quite a number of times before with no real success.
Yeah, and no chance of success today either when the DA brings this motion. So I think one of the big debates that needs to be had by the opposition is this. It's what impact is the opposition, the South African opposition, making on an ANC that is sick and tired and that wants to an ANC that essentially isn't even in the battle, in the fight anymore? What's happening there? And so I think that, how shall I put it? I think that the opposition needs to find its voice and needs to think through how it does things, shall I say. At the moment, the tactics are tired. There's nothing new. There's nothing interesting in what I'm seeing. It's all sort of it's nothing new. It's nothing new. And I think what we faced with is an opposition that just raises a useless motion of no confidence that gets defeated. We have the EFF being thrown out of the house, and it's all same old, same old, same old. And that stuff has a sell-by date, and I think we are past that sell-by date.
But also, the ANC just knows how to counter that anyway. So it's like, okay, this week, motion no confidence. Okay, rally together, throw weight behind presidents, dismiss.
And so I think this is where some innovation, if you will, is needed on the part of the opposition. We can't go on with the same old tactics, same old. It's boring now. It's boring, and it doesn't work. And so I think on the part of the opposition, they're going to have to do something. Otherwise, they're as irrelevant as the people that they oppose. There is nothing new in what we're seeing. And I think that's where the EFF and the DA need to start talking about what are we doing here? What's the point of what we're doing? And is there any way of doing it differently? But if they don't seize the moment, then we are stuck with an opposition that doesn't know what it's doing. And we're stuck with a ruling party that is too consumed by its own internal battles and essentially going nowhere.
Justice, you mentioned the EFF, and I suppose, you know, we can't avoid not talking about their commander-in-chief, Julius Malema. Earlier this week, he made a court appearance in Newcastle, you know, for telling some of his supporters that they should grab unoccupied land. After that court appearance, you know, he said some things that, you know, that were a little bit suspicious, talking about how, you know, there are no threat to white people just yet.
Yeah,
and, you know, now I see that the F.W. de Klerk Foundation, for example, you know, they're calling for a meeting with the South African Human Rights Commission to discuss the statements that Malema made. The FF Plus have spoken out about, spoken against his statements. I mean, is this another case of, you know, getting his, you know, putting his foot in it again for the commander in chief?
I do think that Julius Malema does. You know, I think it's interesting. Julius Malema has been. Think about it. Today, Jacob Zuma has paid 7.8 million rand for that house in KwaZulu-Natal, right?
Yes.
Why did he pay? He paid because Julius Malema took him to court. To the Constitutional Court and said, Baba, this house that you have doesn't belong to you, and the people of South Africa pay for it. And the public protector has ruled that you must pay some money, the undue benefit, and so just do it. So you have a situation here where he goes and uses the Constitution to achieve what he wants.
Mm.
But then the same constitution that he's used to achieve what he wants is the constitution that says, you can't take away people's land without paying for it. There is no law that allows people to just occupy other people's land in South Africa. And so you have a Julius Malema who uses the constitution to achieve his end, and at the same time wants to break that constitution. So the contradiction here is that if Julius Malema and the EFF use the constitution and say you must abide by the constitution, this is what they say, Jacob Zuma, then surely they too must say, we will abide by the Constitution because we want you to abide by the Constitution. And yet, increasingly, we're seeing the EFF calling for land settlements, and I think the land question needs to be discussed. But exactly how long is this going to go on where you choose the path that you like in the Constitution and then you just break the path you don't like? I can't choose that I like the law on this, and then I don't like that one, but I'll just break it. If I like the Constitution, if I believe in it, and I say I will uphold it, then surely, even the bits that I like, I can campaign to have them changed, but I can't just defy the law like that. And I think that's the first thing about this court case with Julius Malema. It's, okay, Baba, you say you are a constitutionalist. You say Jacob Zuma must abide by the Constitution. Why is it that you don't abide by it? Why is it that you don't believe in it, seemingly? And I think that's the conversation that needs to be had here with Julius Malema. The other stuff about, you know, we are not calling for the slaughter of white people yet. I mean, I think that's typical Julius Malema populist. Not even populist talk, it's Putin mouth. He's done this before. You remember from his history in the ANC, Youth League, he's always been, how shall I put it? He's always been someone who just says something and then goes around apologizing for it later. I think this is one of those. The sentiment is unacceptable. But it's very Julius Malema, and you know, the populist leader has become very popular in our world these days. And there is no sense of responsibility. There's no taking of responsibility. And so there will, I don't think there'll be much to stop Julius Malema making more of these and apologizing and then making another one and apologizing.
But, Justice, you almost get the sense that that's the EFF's game, though, in all, just to kind of get the attention, get the sort of groundswell behind them as a cause, is that, they're also just cherry-picking their audiences with a different sort of topics. I mean, they're very much behind the state capture thing. It's all good and well, but then suddenly there's the march and there's the violence, and now it's the this whole land grab thing. So it's you know, is that just going to be the nature of who they're going to be as a party forever and ever?
Well, I mean, that short term, yes, you will attack people and people will think, oh, you guys can do this. But it's not sustainable because people are going to start saying, well, you keep on saying this and then you go to another audience and you say that. And that, you know, you're not consistent. You're not true to who you are and what you say you stand for. That is the big, big challenge for the EFF. It's got to be consistent in its messaging, and at the moment, it's just not consistent. And I think that's a game that will, you know, it's diminishing returns for that party if it continues along that line. But you know, the point about the EFF is this: it contested elections in 2014. It got 6.35%. That 1.3 million people saying we support you. This is a constitutional democracy. 93% of people who voted in 2014 in national elections did not say we like Julius Malema or the EFF. They voted for other people. If the EFF wants land to be transferred to the hands of black people, that's a very legitimate demand. By all means, make the demand. But if you say I'm in the system, surely you must go and convince. There was something beautiful in what Barack Obama said yesterday. He said, in politics, you try to convince people, you lose, and you get up the next day and make the fight again to convince them, not to force them through violence or through occupation, but to convince them that I have the right recipe for this society. And I think that's where the contradiction with the EFF is. Is it going to try to use its argument, or is it going to, like pretty much what happened on campuses, and the EFF student command was involved. You had a situation where civil society is behind the call for free education, but the violence, the intimidation, the looting, has turned a lot of people against that. And I think this is where the EFF faces its own challenge as a person.
All right, Justice Law, we're gonna leave it there with much to think about there locally and abroad. Next week, are we going to see you here in studio?
When will I see you again?
Yes, I see what you see. You can acknowledge it now.
You know,
admission of guilt. There it is.
You know, Justice, we are heading into December, and a lot of relationships, you know, are brought to a complete halt at around this time of the year. So if you want to break up with us, you must just let us know, Justice. You know, we'll recover from the breakup
eventually.
No, I don't want you guys to have a bad Christmas. Come on.
All right, Justice, thanks for joining us as always. Enjoy the rest of PE, whatever it is your business is there today, and we'll catch you back next week.
Thanks, guys. Cheers, guys. Ciao. Bye.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.